Oh, yes, guy. Jim Taddy, Frank Corrado, Dave Feschak with you, subbing for the regulars on Mail It In Friday. Mike Johnson will be by very shortly. But again, and I'll throw this to Frankie C. right off the top again, talk about the Leafs sniffing around Jacob Chychrun, would you?
I would always be sniffing around players like that. I don't think you're doing your job as a general manager if you're not intrigued by young players who have experience in the league and have performed quite well in that league to add to your team. You know, I don't think any team is going to turn their nose up at a guy like Chychrun. And I think at the very least, you kick tires. You just see, because you never know what kind of response you're going to get from the other team, because you know, you might value certain players within your organization higher or lower than someone else may value them around the league. So, you know, every once in a while you kick tires and there might be a match to be made where you're thinking, oh, these guys, maybe they want this guy who I might not even be that high on. So maybe there's something that can be done there. But, you know, Chychrun's obviously a very good player and he's going to be pretty sought after. I think there's going to be, you know, there's going to be multiple pieces going back the other way, and I'm not sure if the Leafs can match what other teams have as far as resources go.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing to sniff around; it's another thing to be able to get the deal done. Because clearly, you know, you would love to have a kid like Jacob Chychrun, who's what he's in his age 24 season, $4.6 million cap hit is very reasonable for his skill set. And let's face it, guys, like you got a lot of question marks on your blue line, like. Is Jake Muzzin going to be able to play this season?
That's a big question, Dave.
In any real way? Like, is he going to need to be load managed, or is he going to be an LTIR situation at some point this year where he's going to need an extended period of time off in order to make it to the finish line and be anything close to what they want him to be in the playoffs? A lot of question marks, guys. So they've got to look at every option on D. If they're talking about Mitch Marner on D, guess what? They need some D.
Yeah, I wonder too. Is that how you read it? Because you think, okay, we're gonna try Marner on D because we don't necessarily love who we have, or we don't think there's puck movers back there. I never even thought of it that way. It's kind of
I'm sort of joking about that. But yeah. Let's face it, like you've got you know Morgan Riley's gonna be Morgan Riley, but yeah. Muzzin, you know, with his age and the mileage on that odometer, you're not sure. I mean, you're looking
it's tough, Mark, when he starts the season like that. Like, you start camp and you already have lingering back issues. I think I was saying it the other day with Carlo and AK, like, this time of year, coming off of summer and going into training camp, ideally, this is when you would say your body feels the best, you mm-hmm. know, because you're not going to have the rest that you just had or the ability to build your body up. From here on out, it's wear and tear. It's wear and tear until the end of the season. And you gotta hope that you're gonna last.
Yeah, and then you got Giordano, who in spot minutes has been very good, but is also, you know, 38, 39 years old. TJ Brody's been very good. I think you can count on him. Justin Hall's been another wild card who's not coming off his best season and needs to, you know, rediscover what made him a player the Leafs believe in to be worth $2 million on a cap hit. And then you got Liljegren and Sandin. Liljegren, of course, hurt to start the year. Sandin coming in, slow start, joining the moving train in training camp here. So, to me, a lot of questions and not a lot of easy answers. Therefore, Do I think that Mitch Marner is going to get a regular shift on D? Of course not. But
I do think
that they've got to be looking for options, you know, wherever they can find them.
Yeah. Chychrun's good player.
And of course, fueled by Dahlstrom out.
Yeah. Yeah,
doesn't exactly. Help.
He's got Dahlstrom, I think, for me, anyways, he was going to the Marlies, but he's a depth guy. And Jordy Benn missing 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Jordy Benn's going to miss 3 weeks. There's a depth guy. Dahlstrom's going to miss 6 months. I guess he's a shoulder. It looked ugly. Hey, when he went down, you could see him kind of shaking his wrist. I wonder if that's like pain heading down into his wrist, or that was ugly. Feel for the guy.
Okay. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Mike Johnson. MJ, how are you today, sir?
I am better than that laundry list of injured guys. I mean, it's crazy to think, and it's not just the Leafs, but all around the league, how many players are hurt before we even get going. Like, it's so many guys have been banged up in camp or heading into camp, and you would have think that this would be the moment when they'd be healthiest, and that's certainly not the case around the league, and certainly not with Toronto.
Johnny, I'm perplexed here because I was just telling, I'm not sure if you heard, but I was just telling these guys, and you can attest to this too, like, this is the time of year where you just had a summer, you just had ample opportunity to build your body up, get the rest that you need, get the treatment you need. This is when your body should be feeling the best it's ever going to feel during a season. And we got guys with foot issues, shoulders, groins, hips. And it's not just the Leafs. Like, it's really bad in Leafland, but it's all around the league. Like, I know we talked about the schedule being condensed the last few seasons, and that's got to factor into it. Like, is some of this stuff avoidable, or is this just inevitable? Like, this is the way the game's going now.
I don't think it's inevitable. I think it maybe could be the cumulative effects of the last few years of it being so disjointed and short summers and weird training and your body never quite heals. And but, you know, for most teams, they've had 3 months off, right? Yeah. Like, I know the year went a couple of weeks later, but they still have had 3 months off. That's plenty of time to rest, recover, have surgeries, and rehabilitate yourself. And like, there's some stuff, you know, whether it's a shoulder injury or you break your foot or something, but like all the groins and the abdominal pulls and the hips, and like that's kind of what you train all summer for. So those don't happen to you in the first week. And I don't think the camps are any harder today than they have been in years past. In fact, many ways they're easier because coaches understand injuries and rest and how hard to push guys. So it is confusing to me why so many guys, it seems like, are just a little nicked up at this time of the year.
Yeah, no doubt about it, MJ. I mean, we were talking about, you know, the Leafs defense corps and obviously some injuries playing a part in, you know, Alex Kerfoot and Cale Yarncroc having to go back and play some D as forwards the other night. We saw Mitch Marner getting some reps in on the blue line for Sheldon Keefe. What do you make of this idea of forwards playing D, Marner specifically, but just in general? I mean, it's not like it hasn't happened before. We talked about Sergei Fedorov putting in some time for Scotty Bowman on the blue line in Detroit all those years ago. There's some Leafs in history, like Wendell Clark and Gary Lehman, who played both positions. How do you see it? Do you think we might see it more as we move toward a more positionless type of league?
Well, so it's interesting, and I'm not taking any credit for this, but somebody asked me this summer about if I could make one rule change, what would I do? If I was a coach, what would I do? I would play four forwards more often, not just on the power play, but at 5-on-5 as well. And I think it makes a lot of sense because other than struggling off the rush, which I think forwards kind of would do, right? Like, they're just not going to be as good at, you know, pivoting, skating, closing gaps. But as far as playing in their own end, I mean, if you're a forward, Frankie's the defenseman, I'm the winger. If I'm down low, like, we're essentially doing the same job, and I'm used to being down there. There's nothing confusing about it. It's all the same, whether I'm the defense or whether I'm a forward, generally speaking, on the system that teams play. So I do like the idea of it. If you're trailing by two and there's 7 minutes left, you don't want to pull your goalie yet, but you want a more offensive thrust, get a forward out there. I think it's the numbers and the data has proven that on power plays with four forwards, they generate way more chances than with three. And I think it would stand to reason that it would be the same on 5-on-5. Now, you might give up a little bit more, but I don't think it's that risky. The one unit that I think about that does it all the time is Boston, because they really trust David Krejci to play defense.
Right.
So Krejci often plays as the second defenseman at 5-on, not often, but occasionally at 5-on-5, and it works out just fine, other than off the rush. But I think it's something we're headed towards. And like the other day when Yarncroc and Kerfoot were doing it, the guys would love it, right? Like, they would love the freedom of playing defense. And if you screw up, it's not a big deal because you're not supposed to be good at it.
Exactly.
But then if you actually like happen to pivot and take someone out of the blue line or turn on, you know, squeeze someone off, you're like, yeah, I got this. This is no problem. So I know the guys would have had fun the other night. And I think it's something we will see more of, because both in the offensive and defensive zone, the idea of positionless hockey where defensemen are kind of roaming around, forwards love to operate up by the offensive blue line in the defensive zone. You know, if you're on a man-to-man system, then you kind of just play your guy wherever he goes, and it's not that confusing in your own end. It might be hard off the rush, but not in your own end.
MJ, were you one of those forwards where every once in a while you got stuck playing defense in practice or something like that, and you threaded a nice pass or you took a nice point shot and you turned to all the defensemen and you said, "This ain't that hard. What are you guys always complaining about?"
Yes, you got me pegged. I absolutely was. And
I hate those
it.
Guys. I hate those guys because they make one good pass. They make one good breakout pass, and they skate by all the defensemen laughing, saying, what do you guys always complain about? Get me the puck.
Yeah, that's it. I'd be moonwalking down the ice like, guys, what is the big deal? No, like one of my favorite memories in hockey, it was a regular season game, and I was playing in Arizona, and Rick Bowness, current coach of the Jets, was the assistant, and he ran the defense. And we ran it, so we had two D in the penalty box, a D who was hurt, and a fight. Like, we were down to, like, two defensemen to kill a penalty. And so he went, you know, reached out the bench, said, Johnny, get down here. I was the seventh defenseman. I loved it. I went out there to kill a penalty as a defenseman. It was hilarious.
It gets the bench going, too. The
boys guys
love
were
it.
Loving it. Yeah. And then, like, of course, I just ole every puck that's coming at me. I'm like, I'm not going to block them like the defenseman do in front of the net. I'm like, I'll get the guy out of the way. I'll let the goalie save it. But, yeah, the guys loved it. But I'll never forget when he called me to play defense for, like, 6 minutes. And I thought it was fantastic. So it does something, get a little juice going, as it would have the other night for the guys in the exhibition game.
And you had the tweet about allowing other players who aren't dressed to step in for injured players, which I liked. I wonder if you got any feedback on that.
Yeah, I mean, I just when you saw the couple of guys go down, not because it's Toronto, but any team, the idea that you have other bodies around, the games mean nothing. The opponent wouldn't protest you putting in a proper positional player. And you don't want to overtax guys playing 25, 28, 29 minutes in an exhibition game. And you don't want guys to have to play positions that aren't their own because, one, it's not good to see if those guys are any good. And, two, maybe there's a bit of a chance of an injury because they get themselves in an awkward spot. So why not? If you have the bodies in the building and it's an injury, not a fight or a bad hit, but it's an injury in the first or second, not the third, because then you just finish up the game, then you give the team a chance to bring someone down and just bring a defenseman in. And it doesn't have to be a veteran guy. It can be a young guy. They'd be excited to play, happy to get in the lineup. It makes a lot of sense. I didn't see too much downside to it. And I did get a few texts back from people who worked in front offices basically saying, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Not sure if it will happen, but it makes a lot of sense. So I would think if the GMs wanted to bring it up, and it's just a little nuanced thing, wouldn't happen often at the GM meetings, it probably would be pretty well supported because it makes a lot of sense because the exhibition games are only about evaluation and development and got nothing to do with winning.
Hey, MJ, we saw, you know, if we're not talking about forwards playing defense, we're talking about left-handed defensemen having to try out the right side, which is the eternal topic, it seems, in Leafland. Although we didn't talk about it that much last year. And we're seeing now Morgan Rielly, you know, volunteering to take some reps on the right-hand side of the pairing with Jake Muzzin or whoever it may be, because we got a lot of left-handed shots out there. I mean, when you're watching ringside, you know, in all the games you do, you know, what's your observation of that you know, situation for left-handed defensemen playing on the right side, and what do you think it might do for or against Rielly?
So there's the obvious times where, like, the puck comes around the boards and he's got to, like, toe-pick it down the boards because he can't pull it on his backhand because, it's, you know, he's on the wrong side. Or, you know, he gets coming out the wrong side of the net and he can't, you know, make a hard clearing play because he's on his backhand. Those are the obvious ones. And I think defensemen that do it often enough figure out ways to work around that. TJ Brody does a really good job of it. But I think for the guys trying to make the adjustment later in their career, like a Morgan Rielly, who hasn't done it very often, not because he can't, just because he hasn't, it's more the instinctive awareness that you have as a defenseman, where people are, where you want them to go, when are you in a good spot, when you're in a bad spot, and all that stuff is just, you're not thinking. You just know. Like, that's okay. I want him there. He's good there. I can take. When you get to the other side, it's not so obvious because you don't know. You just haven't had the experience of, okay, can I close that quickly? What's my strength like on the pivot? All those things that Frankie would, you know, take for granted on his strong side, it's not instinctively ingrained over 20 years on your offside if you've not done it. That's where I think the bigger challenge is, not necessarily can I pull a puck off the wall in my backhand and get to the middle of the ice, or can I take one-timers? Those are obvious. It's the stuff that is the habits that are built in over decades. Those are the ones that are tougher to kind of get around.
And that's exactly it, Johnny. It's a little bit of the subtleties as far as even your sight lines go, right? Like, when you play your strong side, and it's probably the same on the wing too, you're always facing up ice. You're always facing the play, so you don't really have to worry as much. When you're playing your offside, you're always constantly having to check way more, and you find your body's not really facing up ice. And, yeah, there's a lot of advantages to it, but it just and you hit it the nail on the head. Like, it's way more thinking involved. It's not as instinctual. And for a guy like Morgan Rielly, that's the kind of guy for me. I just want him, like, I want him riverboat gambling, offensive defenseman, go do your thing, and I want to insulate him with defense around him, because I feel like over the years, Morgan has had to take on such a, I guess, a leadership role, but he's had to carry so much of the brunt of the load on this back end. I would just love for once to see this guy absolutely unleashed with a steady right-handed partner who can deal with whatever comes back the other way, which I actually don't even think would be that bad, because he would be so involved offensively, you would have the puck most of the shift.
Yeah, well, you know, and kudos to him to kind of say, well, listen, I'll give it a whirl. You know, I'll try it and see how it goes, because he recognizes the need on the team, and he's well established. He doesn't have to offer up that kind of versatility, but he's going to give it a try. And I think whether he plays on a strong side or his offside, I think the idea of having a very good defensive defenseman to let Mo go do what he does best, right? Like, Morgan Rielly's not, you know, a brilliant defensive defenseman. He's good. He's fine, but he's not great. What he is great at, world-class at, is playing with the puck and getting up the ice and being creative and joining the rush and producing offense. And, you know, to get the most out of that side of him, if you can put him with a solid defensive play-driving guy that lets him do his thing, that would be the optimal fit. And I think that's what they're searching for. And whether that guy is Liljegren or Brody or Muzz or Sandin, whoever it ends up being, they're trying to find that balance that lets him be the best version of himself.
MJ, when you look at that Leafs blue line, when it's all healthy, I mean, there's probably some load management with Muzzin and Gio over the course of a year, but what would you assess that blue line to be? How good is it?
It's excellent in its depth. Like they're not maybe the superstar driven, because, you know, Morgan Rielly, if he's the number one guy, he's not as good as Victor Hedman or Cale Makar. But when your third pair is Mark Giordano and Timothy Liljegren, like, that's a really good third pair. If Jake Muzzin's healthy, Muzzin and whoever it is, you know, whether it's Sandin or whether it's Hall or Brody, whatever, like, that can be a really good defense pairing and be rock solid. And then you have Morgan Rielly up top doing what he does, and he's been, you know, a top scoring defenseman for years. It's a top 10 defense in the league on aggregate, not at the top end, not, they don't have a top 10 defenseman probably on the unit, but collectively they can be really, you know, more than serviceable, do exactly what Toronto needs them to do, given the way Toronto's set up front, if they're healthy. And that's a big if, because, you know, Jake Muzzin, when he's right, he's so good. And whoever he plays with, they put up great results. Shot shares, expected goals, actual goals, all that stuff. If he's not, it's an entirely different situation, because Justin Hall is not doing that on his own. Yeah. Right? He needs Muzzin's support to be part of that good pairing. That's where you're not holding your breath, but there's a question mark, because if he can't stay healthy, things start to look a little bit different.
The one aspect of that decor, MJ, I'm interested in your thoughts on, is sort of the sandpaper side to it, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, a couple years ago, you had Zach Bogosian. Last year, you had Ilya Lyubushkin throwing weight around. And this year, I think Kyle Dubas saw the guy who would provide that to be Jordy Benn, who's now out 3 weeks and 35 years old. Maybe he'll be back and be fine, but maybe he won't be. You know, how much are they relying on Ben to provide that? And how concerned would you be that, you know, a lot of that is going to fall on one guy who's 35 years old?
Well, did you anticipate Jordy Benn playing, like, fairly regularly on this defensive group?
Well, 40 games, maybe.
Yeah.
How many?
Well, then who else is going to do that job?
Maybe 40 games, Johnny. Maybe 40 games.
Yeah.
Well, I would not have predicted that. I would have thought they have, you know, if everyone's healthy, it's Rielly and it's Brody and it's Hall and it's Muzzin and it's Giordano and it's Liljegren and Sandin. They're seven. Well, Jordy Benn's at best an eight. Like, I don't think he's playing ahead of any of those other guys. I don't.
No, That's so, taking into account that you would probably have injuries throughout the season.
Yeah, yeah. So you're anticipating a ton of injuries.
Muzzin's not playing 82. I mean, there's no way.
No, but if Muzzin's not playing, Sandin is. Like, they have seven guys ahead of him, is what I'm saying. So, you know, he's kind of a break in case of emergency. I don't think they think of him that way. That doesn't change. You know, I think would they prefer more physical players? I guess, yeah. You want guys with skill who can also play physically. But, you know, you think about even Colorado, who just won the Stanley Cup, you know, their top four, you know, they got Makar and they got Taves and they got Girard. Like, Josh Manson's not a super physical guy anymore. Neither is Eric Johnson. They're big, but they're not, like, crazy physical. Not any different than, you know, Muzzin or Giordano could be. It'd be great. You'd love it if you could have it, but I think they'd rather have puck moving, good skating, guys who can close plays off, and then, you know, if they can be a little extra physical, that's a bonus, but they'd rather have guys making plays with pucks than just chasing it, being physical.
Johnny, if you're Rasmus Sandin and you just signed your contract and you got the money that Liljegren got and you're flying into Toronto now and you got to get acclimated and get ready, I mean, what's your first order of business to get involved and get acclimated and get up to speed with this group?
So I guess he flew. Was he flying today? Yesterday?
I believe it's today.
Today, so he's flying in. So coming this way, time change is not quite as hard. I think that's the hardest thing. He's going to want to jump right into practice. Like, literally, I guess, get through his physical probably today, maybe tomorrow morning, get on the ice in some capacity. So I think just getting your body clock wired to Toronto time so that you can kind of get out there right away. And then I don't think it's more than a day or two. He's up and running with the main group. And then
he doesn't have that much time.
No, but listen, I went over and played in Europe. I flew on a Wednesday night, got there Thursday, played Friday in a game.
Classic Europe, man. They don't waste any time.
No, if you're
a Canadian, Johnny, if you're a Canadian and you're going to play in Europe, they think you are a mix of Gretzky and Bobby Orr combined into one, and you are the savior to the organization, and they need you to play yesterday.
Yeah. When I went out the overnight trip, I was going to Sweden. We already had a stacked team with Sheldon Soure and Danilo Chara and Martin Gerber and all these great NHLers anyways. But, yeah, so it can be done. But I think that his first order of business, get on the ice. Like, make sure you're healthy. Make sure your body's right, your mind's right. You're not kind of, like, foggy because of the time change and the last couple of days. Get on the ice and get into it. Because I think for him, he's got to hit the ground running because he's not just trying to, like, catch up. He's kind of trying to catch up and surpass guys around him, right? He wants to play in the top four. And there are spots in the top four that maybe he could play in right now. So that's where he's trying to get to in the next 2 weeks.
MJ, thanks very much for stopping by. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Mike Johnson joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. Guy, it's time to Toyota. Visit MapleToyota.com. I really like that defense combination or the conversation, rather, and I think it sort of screams out, they need Chychrun, don't they?
Well, I mean, every team would like to have a guy like that. I mean, we talked about last year at the trade deadline, oh, they need Josh Manson. Like, they need... Every team wants a bigger defenseman who can skate well and who can move the puck and defends well. I mean, who wouldn't? Especially a team that's, you know, trying to win a championship here.
Yeah, and I wonder how long into the season we're going to be saying they're missing the snarl of Ilya Lyubushkin and, you know, Zach Bogosian because, you know, if you know, and MJ may be right. Maybe Jordy Benn was never going to play more than 15, 20 games. Spot service is an injury replacement for whoever happens to be out of the lineup. That may be the case. And right now he's out 3 weeks to start the season, which isn't going to help his case somebody they can rely on. But, man, I do feel like we've had that conversation an awful lot, and it only goes away when you got somebody like Lyubushkin knocking people down. Now, who's going to fill that void? Jake Muzzin on the twilight of his career. Maybe it's going to be Rasmus Sandin, who's been known to step into some people occasionally, but I'm not sure, Frankie and Jim. I just think they're lacking that.
Those guys are out there, though. Those guys are out there. You can find guys with some sandpaper, especially on a team that's not going anywhere in the playoffs. I feel like those guys are going to be available. What you need to cultivate is the puck moving guys and you know, develop those guys. Anyways, we got to go to break. I think we're going to play yes guy no guy.
Yes,
I've sanctioned
guy.
It. I've sanctioned it on my end, so we'll just make sure Taddy's good. And then we'll...
For what that's worth, yes, okay, good, it's noted. we're going to play yes guy, no guy next. I have the paperwork in front of me, so it's good to go. This is Overdrive at TSN 1050, tsn1050.ca, and the iHeartRadio app.
Yes guy, no guy.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, drivers and passengers, time now for the fully sanctioned, all rights given edition of Yes Guy, No Guy and Overdrive, which doesn't happen often. So here we go. Are we ready? Yes,
wait,
guy,
wait,
no
wait.
Guy,
before we get going,
one.
Before we get going, Guy, go to Dave first. Go to Dave first, and then I'll go. Is that okay, Guy?
Well, I guess it is, Guy, since you interrupted me. You ruined my flow, but nonetheless, here we go. I don't really care who answers. It's up to you guys. Yes, guy, no guy. Listen to the tone. Rasmus Sandin is happy to be making Timothy Liljegren money?
Oh, that's an absolute, definitive no guy.
No guy.
He can't be happy about this, fellas. I mean, this is a capitulation. This is saying, I don't want to be sitting at home anymore. This is not some good deed that Rasmus Sandin did for the Maple Leafs. This was Rasmus Sandin getting nervous, saying, I actually don't think I have as much leverage as I think I do, even though defensemen are dropping like flies. I think it's a smart move by him. I don't think it was a smart move to be holding out as long as he did. But there's no way he's happy to be making that money, because the reason he was sitting in Sweden is because he thought he was worth substantially more than that money.
Yeah, no, it's no guy, big time no guy. He's accepted this deal because he understands he needs to play, he needs to get some kind of training camp and get up and running with the team. But ultimately, this guy wanted to make Adam Boqvist money, which is, you know, a cap hit of Boqvist makes 2.6 on his cap hit. I would imagine Rasmus probably thought he was looking at $2 million, and Sean Durzi signed for 1.7 per year. So, you know, those are the guys he's looking at as far as salary goes. The issue is, when you're a restricted free agent, you're only negotiating with one team. So you only have comparables for one team, and that's the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the bar had been set with Timothy Liljegren, and that's ultimately what he had to accept. Probably not happy about it, but at the end of the day, you got to prove yourself, you got to play, and you didn't have any leverage in the situation. So it's smart that he's back, smart that he's going to play. And listen, 1.4, whatever that cap hit is, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's good money. And if you know, he has the capability to put up points, put up big numbers, that's when you sign your ticket.
Yeah, I'm a big no guy on that. I admire him for doing what he did, and we'll see the challenge is there for him to step up. So I always back the player when the challenge is there. Yes guy, no guy number two. Morgan Riley and Jake Muzzin spend more time playing together than Riley and TJ Brody.
I'm going to say no guy on this, even though I know we are watching an early training camp iteration of a pairing with Riley playing on the right and Muzzin playing on the left. But, you know, my problem with this whole, you know, the prognosis here, this scenario, guys, is that I'm not sure Jake Muzzin's going to be playing enough for that to be the case. I mean, the idea that he is, you know, heading into, you know, his 35-year-old year, we know the injury problems that have kept him out of some key moments of playoff series in recent memory. We know all the injury problems he had last year, including some, you know, significant concussion issues that he had to deal with. The idea that this guy's going to be in the lineup for, you know, what's the over under on his availability? I'm going to put it at maybe 41 games. So I'm not sure he's going to be out there enough to make him a regular staple alongside Toronto's best defenseman.
Well, here's the way I look at this. So if you had Muzzin playing with Riley, theoretically you'd have Brody with Hall and then Giordano with one of Liljegren or Sandin. And that still presents an issue as far as getting Sandin into the lineup, even though Morgan Riley's playing the right side. I actually don't mind Muzzin on the first pair. I think that kind of just focuses his attention, and he doesn't have to eat a lot of those second pair kind of grungier minutes. You know, it's a little bit of a mixed bag when you play the second pair. But I just think that the health could be an issue. And I don't know, like Morgan Riley playing the right side, I'm not sure if that's a long-term solution for me. So it's going to be a no guy.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with both of you is what I'm trying to say. It's, you know, when I look at that blue line, so let's just do an ad lib yes guy, no guy. Yes guy, no guy. I think we all agree with MJ's assessment of that blue line. But doesn't that, the way that blue line is stacked, sort of scream to upgrade it, to get somebody who's like a go-to guy who can give you the 82 games at high octane? Yes guy, no guy. The Leafs should upgrade that blue line.
Oh, I'm a big yes guy on that. I mean, I you know, A, just the idea that you're already worried about the health of Jake Muzzin, who's been a linchpin, and to me is, you know, I overestimated his age. He's only 33, but he's got high mileage. We know that, you know, we know all the injury issues. That concerns me immensely if I'm Kyle Dubas. The idea that you've already lost, you know, you've lost Timothy Liljegren for the early part of the season here. You know, Rasmus Sandin, you're not sure what you're going to get out of him since he's been sitting at home and you haven't actually, you know, laid eyes on him in any significant situation. Mark Giordano, you know, is into his late 30s and you're expecting a regular shift from him, albeit on the third pairing. There's, you know, there's no doubt to me that they've got to look to upgrade here, if only to sort of, you know, keep pace with the idea that, you know, last year you had a pretty injury-free year. What if this year was a little more injury-pocked? I'd be concerned if I'm in Leafs management about that.
Yeah, listen, I think you're always looking to upgrade. You're always looking to get better. I don't think it's urgent. You know, it's not that long ago that we were talking about the Leafs need to trade one of their defensemen because they have a logjam. It's such a position of depth, you know, and they're facing some injuries now, and this defense is going to be tested. We're going to see what they're all about. But if you start the season and you're not giving up the big scoring chances and you're clearing the front of the net and you're moving the puck and things are going pretty good, that'll cool things off. So I'm going to say no guy for now, but, you know, remains to be seen as far as how they play when the season gets going.
Okay, yes guy, no guy. I believe it's number three. I've lost count here. Aaron Judge reaches the 60 homer mark at least two more times in his career. Yes guy, no guy.
Oh, I'm going to say no guy to that. I mean, this is a Herculean year. The reason it's so significant is just because it's such an outlier. The idea that he's doing what he's doing and doing it at a level compared to his peers that is just, you know, so outstanding. You look at it, he's got 61. The next guy in Major League Baseball has got 42. Yeah. Which tells you how hard it is to hit 61, right? When the rest of the league is, you know, there's only two guys that are at 40 in Kyle Schwarber and Pete Alonso right now. Yeah, this is the ultimate outlier year. He's a great player. I don't doubt that he's going to be a very good player for many, many years to come. But the idea that this guy's just going to reel off 60 home run seasons, I mean, I think you'd be underestimating how difficult what he is doing right now has been.
Yeah, and this is not a slight against Aaron Judge. He's a fantastic player. He's having one of the best seasons we've ever seen in baseball. But it's a no guy. You're not going to be, you know, you're not going to be sniffing around 60 home runs. And like you said, Dave, if this guy's getting 40, 45 home runs, that's a big year. That's a big year in this day and age in the major leagues. So that would be, I mean, I just, to quote the great Al's brother, I just don't see it happening.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah, that sums it up. I'm going to disagree with both of you. I think he does it again.
Wow.
If anybody can, it's him. This guy is he's a specimen. I mean, he either does that or sets a record for intentional walks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I think he is a specimen. I think he's an incredible player. But, you know, last year you look at it and what, you know, 48 home runs led the major leagues. The 162 game season before that in 2019, before the pandemic, it was 53 that led the major leagues. Like you can be leading the major leagues. 48 led it the year before that. Like, it's hard to get into the 60s, man. That's why we're making such a big deal of this.
Exactly.
And that's why this is just something that I think we're going to be remembering for many years, because I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon.
Okay, this is kind of a lightweight yes guy, no guy, but I'm going to throw it out there. And that's probably another game. Lightweight yes guy, no guy. Jose Barrios does not make an appearance in the wild card round for the Jays. Does not make an appearance.
Oh, that's going to be a no guy. I mean, you know, because I think that the reason for that, guys, is, and we've been talking about it on this show over the summer, is management makes these calls. This is not about Schneider. This is not about anybody that's on the bench during the game. This is about management's vision of the Toronto Blue Jays. And the management vision of the Toronto Blue Jays sees Jose Berríos as a very important asset to whom they've gifted a $120 million contract, and they need him to perform. So whether or not he's going to start a game, I'm not sure. I think Ross Stripling probably can make a great case, but he's definitely going to be in a game. And if he doesn't start, probably multiple games.
Yeah, so I'm with you there, Dave. I think it's no guy. I think at some point we're going to see Berríos. And if it's not a start, I know he hasn't come out of the bullpen, but you got to think in a playoff situation, you know, certain strategies or certain setup situation, we're going to see Berríos come out of the bullpen if Stripling decides to get the start. Even though Berríos has struggled, I am not convinced that it's Ross Stripling's start in Game 3. I just think there's too much, I guess, pedigree. I don't know if pedigree is the right word or body of work over the course of his career that says, you know, and the contract. Like it's a tough message to send, you know, around the league when you're trying to recruit pitchers to your team, and it says, you know, we're going to sign you, but in Game 3 of the playoffs, you might not start. And I don't know. I just think it might send the wrong message, even though, and you know what? You could even go the other way. You could even go the other way and say, well, if you don't give Ross Stripling this start, it sends a bad message. And it says, no matter how bad you play, as long as you make X amount of dollars, you'll still be rewarded with starts in the playoffs. So listen, I don't know what they're going to do, but you can take it to the bank. At some point, we will see Berríos in the wild card series.
Yeah, and I got
okay,
the number
let's
wrong.
Let's end on this one. Two.
Sorry, guys. I just wanted to correct myself, Tatman. I apologize. I said $120 million investment. It was $131 million, which is another, you know, $11 million why he's
just
definitely 11. Going to be appearing in the playoffs.
Just $11 million, no biggie.
Oh. Yeah, okay. I'm used to working with factual people, but nonetheless, let's end on this one. Yes guy, no guy. Tua will be the Dolphins' starting quarterback next season.
If it was next week, I was going to say, let's hope not, guy. But next season, yes, guy. I think next season, yes, guy. I think there will be, you know, continued belief in this player. I mean, I know that Al's brother has attempted to tell us that the Finns are frauds. But, you know, Tua, to me, is a guy that will always tantalize because he has this incredible potential. Now, we're all wishing, we're all hoping that Tua is going to be okay after these – you know, these pair of ugly incidents where he's had, you know, what looked like to, you know, us armchair experts as concussions in you know, two games over the course of 4 days in the NFL. And it's been pretty ugly. And who knows what this is going to do to him and how it's going to affect his future. But if I'm betting, yeah, I think Tua will be in Miami as the starter beyond this season.
I'm going to say yes, guy, as well. But I'm going to say it with a little bit of caution. And the caution for me comes from if this injury, this concussion issue, if this keeps going south and doesn't get better, I can see a situation where Tua says to the team, I don't like the way you guys treated me with the concussion. I'd like to move on to another team, please. And that's, you know, that's if Tua is able to play. And I'm sure, you know, he's going to get the attention and the care that he needs. I hope so. But that's the only situation. It's not going to be something where they say, oh, we don't think Tua's the quarterback for us or he's the guy for us. How many times have we seen quarterbacks go around the league carousel team to team and struggle? And when you have a decent quarterback, you hold on to him. And I think Tua fits the bill of a more than decent, more than capable quarterback in the NFL. So, yes, guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a yes guy in that one, too, so it's unanimous. Coming up next, we're going to find something to talk about. The latest at the top of the hour, Dave Poulin will be by in hour number three, Josh Leuenberg as well. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, tsn1050.ca, also available on the iHeartRadio app. Overdrive, Mallard and Friday, Taddy, Corrado, and Festchuk with you, taking you up to Leafs hockey at 7 o'clock. Frankie C. and I will guide you through that, and Joe Bone and Jim Ralph will be in studio to give us the call from Belleville as well as the Leafs take on the Ottawa Senators. The one thing that we didn't talk about with Tua was, you know, players sort of working through injuries or hiding them. Here's Drew Brees on how often he hit injuries during his playing career.
All the time. I mean, look, it's I recognize the kind of the delicate place we're in right now, especially when it pertains to head and neck injuries. Like when you think about like the game of football, I mean, even from its inception, is like this warrior sport, you know? And I say this goes for any sport, but any physical sport especially, which is, man, it's like, don't show pain, don't show fear, don't show like anything other than the focusing on the objective to go win, to go dominate, you know, whatever that is. And so the rate of injury in the NFL is 100%, right? We always tell ourselves that, right? I get asked all the questions, weren't you afraid of getting hurt? No, because you just expect to get hurt at some point and you expect that you're going to have to play through it. Like, that's just the nature of the beast. Now, when it comes to head and neck injuries, I think we've recognized that that is totally different. And whereas in the past that was ignored, it is something that is even more important and should be treated the exact same way as, like, if you pull a hamstring and you're going to be out for 3 weeks, if you, you know, have trauma to your brain, you're probably going to be out 3 to 4 weeks.
What I'm intrigued about with this, and I'm going to throw this at Frankie right away, is you're on the ice, somebody gets hit, and you know they're hurt because you played the game. I mean, you know, if that was you, what you would be going through, and they play through it. I mean, how do you, when you're playing against somebody that you know is hurt, how do you do that?
It's tough, right? If you see someone stumble and fall, sort of the way Tua did, and we've seen it a lot in the NHL where guys get hit and they're kind of falling over, I think guys are pretty good about going to the dressing room at that point. I can't say that I've seen too many guys do that, sit on the bench, maybe miss a shift and come back into the game. Where I kind of see it is guys almost struggle after the fact. You know, after the game, they're saying the lights in the dressing room are too bright, or the music's too loud, or, you know, they got to go home and sit in a dark room. And I think, like, a lot of times there's doctors that help and want to be a part of the solution for you. But there needs to be someone more dedicated to the brain, I think. You know, I think a lot of times it's like an orthopedic surgeon or, you know, a general physician, and they do great work and they know their stuff for sure. But it's almost one of those things where we should have someone just dedicated to the brain, you know, around the team, around the room, because it's a little more of a specialized thing. It's a little more nuanced. It's not a pulled hamstring. Sometimes it's hard. It's hard to see the symptoms sometimes.
Well, that's exactly it, Frank. Like, you guys know me, I'm the furthest thing from a brain surgeon, but in my job, I do get to talk to brain surgeons more than occasionally when I'm discussing, you know, the concussion issue and trying to get expert feedback. And you've hit on the exact point, Frankie. Like, this is not the same as a pulled hamstring. There's no MRI, there's no scan, there's no X-ray, there's no pill, there's no blood test yet. Like, you have to rely on the athlete to give you feedback as the diagnosing physician. And so if you're going to be Drew Brees and you're going to essentially acknowledge, I'm going to try and hide this injury from my doctor, I'm not going to report my concussion symptoms because I don't want to go into concussion protocol, I don't want to have to miss games, I don't want to cede the control of my health to a doctor, I want to be in control, and I want to, if I'm going to say if I want to play or not, right? And I think that's what we see again and again. And to your point, Frankie, you know, a lot of guys, because they're competitive beings, because, you know, being competitive and wanting to play through whatever got them to where they are, they continue with that, and they only kind of come to realize the effects of that much later in their life.
Exactly.
Right?
It's denial. When you get your bell rung, or even if you get hurt, you get a little tweak in your groin, your hamstring, your shoulder, whatever the case may be, there is a moment in time as a player where you have a little moment of denial. And you're like, no, it can't be. It's not me. Not again. Right? I don't want this to happen. I want to keep playing. And you almost kind of like you walk it off or you shake it off and you're like, it's going to go away. And it doesn't really – at some point it's going to get you. And you're going to have to say, okay, I need to leave the game. I need to stop my activity because it's gotten too bad. And that's – Drew Brees is essentially – he's kind of – he's not right – But it's indicative of players. Like, we want to be out there, we want to be playing, and we don't want anything disrupting that.
Okay, I got about 90 seconds to do this. This is the flaw in the system for me, and I have talked on air with concussion specialists, and it always comes back to this. At some point, after all the tests, you're still going to turn to the individual and ask them how they are, and if they're injured, they're impaired, and it's unreliable testimony, and yet that has a big part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough because you get to the point too with injuries where you're like, okay, I'm good enough to play. My groin is good enough to play. My shoulder is good enough to play. It's tough with the brain because good enough to play, you get one more hit and now you're on the sidelines for a while and you're dealing with some serious consequences. You really have to be sure when you go back.
Yeah, and that is a scary thing. And, you know, the stuff I've talked to the real experts, that second impact syndrome, right, the second concussion, and you worry about that with Tua. Like, the idea that you can have these back-to-back concussions and the second one can do so much more damage than the first, that's where it gets scary, and that's where you're talking about, you know, taking somebody's life in their hands on the field.
Okay, so we sort of wrapped that up. Dave Poulin will be by at the top of the hour, which is mere seconds away. Going to talk hockey with him. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, TSN1050.ca, also available on the iHeartRadio app.